Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, February 12th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gandhi.
Among our top stories this evening:
violence reared its ugly head in Harare's Mavuku high-density suburb today, pitting ZANU-PF and MDC supporters against each other during a tour of council projects by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai.
Some ZANU-PF supporters, clad in their regalia and using their party's vehicle inscribed ZANU-PF Harare Province, barricaded the main road leading.
Ousted ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo says his faction will press ahead with its efforts to challenge the party's disputed December Congress, despite pronouncements by Party Secretary President Robert Mugabe yesterday that the party's principles and rules are not subject to higher courts.
And workers grumble over Reserve Bank Governor John Mangudya's pronouncement yesterday that workers should not expect salary hikes this year.
We don't agree with what is being proposed, because in the first instance, the government knows, say, if they want to bring up anything, they must bring it at the TNF, the Tripartite Negotiating Forum, but they did not.
Violence erupted in Harare's Mavuku high-density suburb today, pitting ZANU-PF and MDC supporters against each other when former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai toured some council projects in the area. Our correspondent Thomas Cheripasi was there and he filed this report.
Some ZANU-PF supporters, clad in their regalia and using their party's vehicle inscribed ZANU-PF Harare Province, barricaded the main road leading into Mavuku off the Harare Mutare Highway with stones and logs to stop Mr. Tsvangirai's tour. However, Mr. Tsvangirai's motorcade had to negotiate its way through the bush into Mavuku, where the former premier's first stop was Mavuku police station, where he registered a complaint. A vehicle that was carrying journalists sped off when the newsmen were trying to take pictures of the ZANU-PF youths barricading the road. MDCT's local councillor for Mavuku Ward 21, Munyaradzi Kufakutizwe, and former Harare City councillor Peter Marange were pelted with stones and suffered head injuries. Marange told Studio 7 that he was also dragged in the tarmac by the vicious ZANU-PF youths. After making a report at the police, Mr. Tsvangirai's entourage, that included MDCT Deputy National Chairperson Morgan Komichi and Harare Deputy Mayor Thomas Muzuva, proceeded to Kamunu Shopping Center to see a market that the council is erecting. Muzuva told the former premier that the market stalls were almost complete, but a shortage of funds had delayed their completion. While Muzuva led the former prime minister in touring the market stalls, an unidentified number of vehicles carrying ZANU-PF youths arrived at the scene, dropped them off, and started throwing stones at MDC members in Mr. Tsvangirai's entourage, resulting in local MDC activists who were now following their leader retaliating. In the fracas, some ZANU-PF vehicles had their windows smashed before they sped off. The opposition leader also took his tour to Old Tafara to see boreholes that were drilled by council in partnership with a foreign company in a bid by the city fathers to end the water problems in the area, where a multitude of his supporters gathered after the news of his impending visit filtered through. There, Mr. Tsvangirai told the MDCT faithful that he would not allow ZANU-PF to declare some no-go areas throughout the country, let alone in Mavuku Tafara, which his party controls.
Whoever in ZANU-PF is encouraging this kind of youth, unemployed youth, hooliganism, must bear the consequences. I'm not going to have an area, a no-go area for me. I refuse to accept that. And whoever is promoting that kind of violence and hooliganism must be condemned in the strongest term.
After his tour, Mr. Tsvangirai told journalists at his Highlands residence that President Robert Mugabe should put a stop to violence that is resurfacing in most parts of the country. He said today's incident and other cases being reported in some parts of the country is a serious indictment on Mr. Mugabe, who is also the chairman of both the African Union and the Southern African Development Community.
In fact, what we should be talking about is to implement the new constitution and all the rights that are enshrined in the constitution.
Meanwhile, the former prime minister praised the local authority for working hard to address the plight of the people in Mavuku and Tafara, especially on water provision, despite the difficult economic conditions obtaining in the country.
The most perennial problem of Mavuku has been the issue of water. And I think that the council has responded to the water shortage in Mavuku.
Mr. Changirai is expected to visit several places countrywide to get first-hand the people's living conditions. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. Meanwhile, the MDCT is welcoming recommendations by the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, saying the country's opposition can only wrestle power from ZANU-PF in the year 2018 if they bury the hatchet and form a coalition. The ZDI released a report this week titled Political Parties Split in Zimbabwe, the Case of the Movement for Democratic Change, following a survey conducted in the MDC stronghold of Harare to get the people's views. ZDI Director Pedzisai Ruhanya explains the survey and its outcome to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
The idea was to find out the causes of the split, the effects of the split on the party, and how the party supporters viewed this split. And what we did was to look at the MDC stronghold of Harare. So it was based in Harare, MDC structures in Harare, to hear their views on the reasons for the split and what they think should be done. And what we found from our survey report is that 66% of the people interviewed, we interviewed 150 people, say that the split has weakened the party and that the split was unpopular. Secondly, we also find out that the major cause of the split was greed. So 43% said the major reason was the greed up among the political elites, that is the top leadership. 13% said lack of adherence to the party constitution caused the split. 12% said failure to win the election was also a cause for the split. 9% saying weak leadership. 14% was class difference. And 15% was lack of party democracy, intra-party democracy. But from our interviews, a significant number, 57%, say that the split could have been avoided.
Is it not true also that the multiplicity of political players are essential in a democracy?
Fundamentally, from our research, the split was elite-driven, had nothing to do with the grassroots people, it was unpopular, it weakened the party, and the people we interviewed are calling the political leadership to patch up their differences so that they confront the problems that the country is facing in a united front.
That was ZDI Director Pedzisai Ruhanya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Still with politics, Chris, outstate ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo has accused Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, both lawyers, of misleading President Robert Mugabe in opposing their desire to approach the court and challenge the outcome of the party's disputed December Congress. Chairing his party's Politburo meeting in Harare yesterday, Mr. Mugabe said the party's principles and rules are not subject to the higher courts. Efforts to get a comment from Messrs. Mnangagwa and Chinamasa were futile as their mobile phones went unanswered. Gumbo tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that they will press ahead with their court action.
It is said that the president continues to be misled by so-called party lawyers who really don't seem to understand the constitution, who seem not to understand the legal aspect of all these things. Who can deny us the right to go to court? The constitution is very clear that anybody who is aggrieved is supposed to take his case to the courts. I mean, this applies to marriage, this applies to religious organizations, this applies to political parties. All these things have been there. Why should they deny us that right to go to courts? As I said, it only underlines the failure by the legal team to advise him correctly on some of these issues.
But when you say Mr. Mugabe is being given the wrong advice, by who specifically, Mr. Gumbo?
Well, the lawyers there. Mnangagwa is there. He's supposed to be the guru in the legal fraternity. Chidamasa is there. He's the Secretary of Legal Affairs. There is Paul Mangwana. These are the lawyers that they have. And these are the people who are misleading them from A to Z. They misled them about the constitution, that the constitution can be changed without going through the normal processes, without following the original constitution of the party. And now the entire country is in a mess. The entire party is in a mess. That's because of those people. They are there. They are known. And if Namata has come out to... He actually came out a few days before to say there is no way the Zimbabwean court can entertain cases which are coming from the party. Now, what nonsense is that? Is he really the so-called legal expert who can advise the party when he doesn't seem to understand what is going on?
That was ousted former ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Mutare Mayor Councillor Tatenda Namarare says the council has no immediate plans of removing vendors from the streets following a verbal directive from local government minister Ignatius Chombo. Namarare says that the minister's pronouncements for local authorities to immediately remove all illegal vendors from the streets of major cities came through the media, adding his local authority will not move or respond unless they receive a written directive from the ministry. Vendors are complaining that it is unfair for the government to force them off the streets when the job market continues to be depressed with the country's economy still in the woods. Correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has details on this and more from Manicaland province.
Councillor Namarare tells Studio 7 that the local authority would comply with the directive only if ordered to do so, as by the Urban Councils Act. Namarare said Mutare has more than 2,000 vendors on the streets of the mountainous city, with many more in high residential suburbs. He says removing them in the absence of the alternative facilities where they can operate from will be disastrous.
Once we receive that directive as a written directive to us, we have to comply with it as a matter of urgency. But at the present moment, yes, the minister has made numerous press statements concerning that issue, but we haven't received a formal written directive to us from the minister.
The mayor says the city's town planning department is currently working on finding alternative places to relocate the vendors, but it desperately needs partners to work with as the local authority is struggling with financial shortages.
Currently, the process of finding the place is currently underway. So once the surveyors and the planners complete, we will exercise that program as soon as they complete that exercise.
Mr. Chombo last week announced that he wanted all cities to get rid of street vendors whom he accused of trading indiscriminately in cities and on pavements and shop entrances, inconveniencing businesses. The vendors in Harare, for example, have overrun places like First Street, with many saying the city has, as a result, lost its sunshine city status with the litter found everywhere. The minister's remarks followed Vice President Pegezele Poko's comments that the vendors were a nuisance, as able-bodied people were now into businesses, he said, were previously meant for the handicapped. His statement attracted a backlash from the vendors who accused this government of being responsible for the collapse of industries leading to the massive unemployment. In Mutare alone, close to 300,000 people have been rendered jobless in the past 4 years, according to a Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries report. The report states that 10 major companies closed the shop during the same period, among them Karina, Mutare Board and Paper Mills, while others such as Keynes Foods, Quest Motor Corporation are operating below full capacity. In other news from Manicaland, the 9 family members from Odis Ada Transau moved from Chiadzwa in 2010 to pave way for the government's diamond mining activities have been served with eviction orders from houses they moved into when forced out of the rich diamond area. The government now wants to offer the houses to school teachers in the area. The Kambeni family seized the teachers' houses after failing to secure adequate housing for their huge family of 12 wives and over 35 children. The diamond mining companies failed to provide enough space for the family, which contends that it had enough houses in Chiadzwa where they were forcibly moved. The summons and eviction orders were served on Monday. One of the wives, Miss Philippa Kambeni, told Studio 7 today that following the summons, the family is now in a quandary. She says they forcibly moved into houses meant for teachers after realizing that the diamond mining firm Anjin Investments were failing to keep their promise to provide the house for each of Mr. Kambeni's wives. Anjin moved the villagers from Chiadzwa to Ada Transau with the approval of the government. Ms. Peggy Tavagadza of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who is representing the affected families, told Studio 7 on the phone she was busy preparing opposing papers ahead of the 18th of February court date. She hopes by Monday to be able to stand in court to block the evictions and to force the company to provide alternative accommodation. Lawmaker Batsire Pemenai, who represents Mutare North constituency, which incorporates Ada Transau, could not be reached for a comment. The Minister of State for Manicaland Province, Mandi Chimene, says she has been informed of the development but was yet to visit Ada Transau. She told Studio 7 in Mutare that she was going to find out on her own what was going on. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Rueda Moyo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
workers and employers take on pronouncements by RBZ Governor John Mangudya for a salary hike freeze.
But first, Chris, we take a look at regional and international news.
An Egyptian court today released two Al Jazeera journalists after joining their retrial on charges of supporting the Muslim Brotherhood until February 23rd.
A report issued by the media watchdog Reporters Without Borders said press freedom declined around the world last year. The annual Press Freedom Index said the conditions in two-thirds of the 180 countries surveyed worsened in 2014.
And the Red Cross says its Ebola workers in Guinea are being attacked an average of 10 times per month, endangering efforts to stop the spread of the disease. In a statement today, the International Red Cross said the most recent incident was Sunday in the town of Fokaria, Western Guinea, where two workers were beaten while trying to conduct a safe burial for Ebola victims.
Reserve Bank Governor John Mangudya has angered the majority of the country's workers by his pronouncements that Zimbabweans should not expect salary increases this year. Workers believe there are some companies that are doing well and can afford to hike salaries, as opposed to what is being said by Mr. Mangudya and Finance Minister Mr. Patrick Chinamasa. For perspective on this issue, we reached Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe President John Mufukari and Deputy Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Secretary Gideon Shoko, who says the workers are angry that they were not consulted.
We don't agree with what is being proposed, because in the first instance, the government knows to say if they want to bring up anything, they must bring it at the TNF, the Tripartite Negotiating Forum. But they did not. We are now just getting it being announced by the Reserve Bank Governor Chinamasa, being announced by Dima. So, ordinarily, as workers, we don't agree with that stance.
Mr. Mufukari, as you can hear, the workers are obviously unhappy, but it's obviously sweet music to the ears of you as the employer.
I have a lot of sympathy with what Mr. Shoko is saying. Procedure was not followed. This would have carried a lot more weight if it had come through the tripartite negotiating forum. However, I can also understand why the Reserve Bank governor felt it necessary for him to jump in, even into areas where he is not normally supposed to swing because of the situation in the country. He has introduced bond coins, and people are not taking to those bond coins because obviously they still have at the back of their minds the thought that this might mean a return of the Zim dollar through the back door. But his argument is really quite sound. He is looking at the labor market, improving productivity, and pricing their products properly, so that what we are likely to be achieving through collective bargaining, which is around an inflation-related increase, can then be achieved through a reduction in prices. And a reduction in prices will make the whole of the economy a lot more competitive. We have lost a lot of market share to other outside producers. His argument makes sense.
Coming back to you, Mr. Shoko, what sort of recourse do you think you can try to use here to be involved in whatever consultations that are taking place?
No, look, what is simply needed here is to respect other stakeholders in all the issues that are in the domain. The Reserve Bank governor is an advisor to government. He was supposed to advise government to say, look, go to TNF, and then you deal with this issue holistically. You deal with salaries, you deal with the prices of goods and services. And at the same time, now, we are now doing it piecemeal. Mr. Mfukari is talking about productivity. Look, my sister, when you are talking about productivity, it's when you have got new machines. When you've got machines that were made in 1954, and you talk about productivity, it's impossible. But what you are simply saying is, look, government must do the right thing. Meet all the stakeholders. It becomes owned by everyone. But in this instance, it's not inclusive. And therefore, from labor point of view, we are not accepting what the governor, what Chinamasa, what Ibima say.
Lastly, coming to you, Mr. Mfukari, what are you recommending as the employers?
We are agreeing with the Reserve Bank governor that we now need to be looking at how we can look at the macro economy. He talked about the cost of utilities. If we can somehow bring our cost of utilities in line with other regional equivalents, then really and truly we will be on the path to recovery. But at the same time, we know there are a lot of political considerations to be taken care of. Yes, we all want the municipalities to reduce the rates that they are charging us, the water charges, improve the roads, because all those are cost drivers as far as production is concerned. But we also know that the city councils are working from a situation where they were paralyzed when government ordered them to forego all the rest that were owed in the run-up to the July 2021 election. So really, we are in between a rock and a hard place.
That was Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe President John Mufukari, and you also heard the views of ZCTU Deputy Secretary General Gideon Shoko. They spoke from Harare.
Valentine's Day will be marked not only as a day of love, but also of the pain women experience as victims of gender-based violence. As Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye explains, 1 billion women around the world will gather to raise attention to the issue.
Some rights organizations in the country will this Saturday join the rest of the world in the 1 billion Rising Revolution campaign to demand justice in the fight against gender-based violence. Campaign coordinator Nyasha Sengai launched the program in Harare today.
In 2013, across the whole world, there were 203 countries that rose and people went out and danced. Zimbabwe had about 400 Zimbabweans coming out to dance at the National Art Gallery. 2014, we had 8 rising in most of the provinces in the country. We had more than 3,000 people in total rising and dancing. So in 2015, we're rising and dancing again, which is why we've invited you for this press release, so that we can just share a bit of what we're doing.
The 1 billion campaign is a global effort. It started on Valentine's Day in 2012 by a group called V-Day to stem violence against women. An estimated 1 in 3 women on the planet will be beaten or raped during their lifetime.
Given the global demographics, there are 7 billion people on Earth, there are 3 billion women on Earth, and that leaves us with 1 billion women who are going to be either raped or they're going to be physically attacked in their entire lifetime.
As Sengea explains, Zimbabwe's participation is growing.
We've been in Chitungwiza, we're going to be in Bindura, we're going to be in Mutare, and we're also going to be in Harare.
Tendai Garwe is an activist who has joined the movement.
The 14th of February, it's supposed to be a day of expression of love and all things bright and beautiful and rosy. And yet there are also sisters around the world who are experiencing violence and violations of sort.
So Valentine's Day around the world, it will be a day not only for red roses, honor, love, but also dancing and drum beats to signal the end of violence against women. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Marvelous Mlanganyahuye in Washington.
Thank you, Marvelous. Chris, time now for us to remind our listeners to remember that Studio 7 is now on Channel Zim on your WiseTech free-to-air decoder all throughout the week. From your WiseTech decoder, look for CHZim. Channel Zim is available 24/7 on your satellite, television, smartphone, and online. To listen online, go to www.channelzim.net.
And also, listeners, please continue sending emails to your mailbag on studio7@voanews.com so we can read your messages on air. The address again, studio7@voanews.com.
Listeners, you can also call our hotline number, which is +1 202-205-9942 and dial 11 when the phone is answered to leave us your voice message, which we can play on air. The number once again is +1 202-205-9942 and then dial 11 to leave your message.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about St. Valentine's Day.
To join the discussion, please text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. Chris, the music there of the legend Bob Marley going out to our listeners from Studio 7 here at the Voice of America.
Yes, and he's setting up the pace for the Valentine's Day that's coming up.
Certainly.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Violence rears its ugly head in Harare's Mavuku high-density suburb, pitting ZANU-PF and MDC supporters against each other.
Ousted ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo says his faction will press ahead with its efforts to challenge the party's disputed December Congress.
And workers are unhappy with Reserve Bank Governor John Mangujga's pronouncement yesterday that workers should not expect salary hikes this year.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamili and Sandekile. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night.